I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. It seems lately that you can't open the newspaper, scroll through Twitter, or tune into local news without hearing yet another report about a sexual assault or harassment allegation levied against a person in power. But even though this issue is rising to prominence in the public consciousness right now, this isn't a new problem. Today we'll meet a group of people who are, unfortunately, intimately acquainted with boundary violations and sexual violence. Teenagers. Psychologist Wes Crenshaw joins us too as this panel of young women shares their experiences confronting what the Me Too movement is now bringing to light. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Rape culture, misogyny, sexual harassment, abuse of power. In the past few months, these terms have all come to the forefront of our national discussion under the banner of the Me Too movement. Dr. Wes Crenshaw says those topics are nothing new among the young people with whom he speaks with on a daily basis. Teens and young adults have been confronting these issues for years. They've got a lot to say about the subject. He's back with a panel of high school seniors to tackle this very difficult conversation. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a Lawrence psychologist and author of the forthcoming series of books, Consent-Based Sex Education. He brings this panel of young women who have made contributions to that book. Wes, nice to have you back.
Good to be here on this important topic.
And also with us, Ting Ting joined us in 2017 for a discussion of teens and politics. She's a Free State high school senior. Nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Claire Fontiner is also from the Free State High School. Claire, nice to have you. Welcome.
Hi.
Did I come close?
Yeah, you did.
Kind of close. Asayol Ali Jerry is also here. Nice to have you as well.
Thank you. Good morning. For having me.
You're all laughing, already having a good time, making fun of the host here. Yeah. Well, Ting Ting, this issue of sexual harassment has shot to the top of the national agenda in a way that has astonished a lot of people. What do you make of it? Because one point of today's show is that you folks, younger people, have been talking about this for years.
Right. I think a lot of these conversations have actually started amongst like my peers and the people that I interact with on a daily basis.
You beat us, all us older folks to the punch a long time ago. Yeah.
Right. Like we have a lot of clubs at Free State, like the Feminist Club last year and this year with the Feds Club, that are constantly having discussions about this and ways that we can address these issues. And it's really amazing to see how this movement has kind of been brought to attention, and like how the nation has to face this culture that we have almost created amongst ourselves.
Asayol, are you surprised it's come to the forefront in the way that it has, given what Claire just said?
Not really, because it was bound to happen.
Hmm.
You can't avoid these issues and just hide them under the covers for as long as possible, because people will speak out and they will talk about their experiences, and addressing it right now seems like the perfect time, because we're also getting teenagers into the conversation on a national level.
You know, Claire, a lot of people listening might think you guys are just high school seniors. You're too young to have experienced anything remotely like this. What would you say to them?
Well, a lot of us have already experienced what the culture is, like rape culture, and just because our age is a lot less than the older folks, that doesn't mean that our experiences don't count and that our voices don't matter. So, and as a new generation and the upcoming generation, I feel like we should have the most say in what is going on and how it affects us and the world that we would be living in.
Are you taking some pride, Ting Ting, in this notion that maybe you guys have kickstarted this national conversation?
I mean, absolutely. It's so inspiring to see all of these like amazing people that are rising up and letting their voice be heard, especially when, like, you see celebrities and people that, like, so many others look up to. Just like at the Golden Globes when all of these, like, fantastic women were wearing black. Like, that is just, it's so inspiring to see.
What did you think of that show last night? Because the whole point of the program, to some extent, was a statement that was being made last night loud and clear across the country.
Yeah, I think the it's termed the Time's Up movement, I believe. And it's something, not only is it addressing this idea of that women are constantly dealing with rape culture and sexual harassment, but that our minds and the things that we say are more than just what we wear and what we appear to others mm-hmm. as.
Claire, are things changing yet? Have you noticed a change since this movement kickstarted?
People are talking, and I think that's what's important right now, is right. to bring awareness to what is happening, because back then people would just slide it under the rug. But now it's being brought into a brighter light, and there's a conversation going around, and I think that's important.
That's a big change, isn't mm-hmm. it? It's a huge change. Asylo, you were nodding your head as she was talking. You agree with that?
Yes, because it also brings up conversations with parents. For example, I had a discussion with my father last night about rape culture and how it's the spotlight is finally being shined on it, and how we contributed to rape culture as a society. And I think that's really important.
And you said what when it came to how we contributed to that culture? How did we do that?
Small things like how we teach young women to prevent rape, but at the same time, we don't teach our young men we don't teach them proper consent, what consent is. And also bringing down women for what they wear and using that to justify sexual violence against women.
Yeah. Wes Crenshaw, you're nodding your head as Asayal speaking here.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned over the years is young people are really worth listening to. You know, my job is to hand out super smart advice to kids, but I sure do learn about as much from them as I give out. And one of the things we talked about on this show before, and it's interesting, it's already come up with all three of the young women's comments, is there's really three audiences for this discussion. And the first audience is young women. And as you can hear, they want to talk about rape culture. They want to talk about a societal situation that creates an atmosphere of misogyny, which then sort of cascades down into actual assaultive behavior. Now, parents, you and I, want to talk about personal safety awareness. And you may remember John Kasich last year just fell into a trap of his own making by suggesting that if young women wanted to avoid rape, they just needed to stay away from alcohol parties. And as I told these folks when we were prepping this show, that's one of those statements that is simultaneously true and offensive, because drinking shouldn't cause someone to rape you. Mm-hmm. But as a parent, and you and I are both parents of young adults, we want our kids to be thinking about wearing their seatbelt when they drive, or not texting, or not putting themselves in situations that are very highly fueled for mm-hmm. sexual misconduct. And then the third third audience that needs to be having this conversation are young men. And typically, when you go to young men and say, "Hi, I'm here to talk to you about rape culture," they immediately get on Twitter and say something and hashtag it, "Not all men." That's the hashtag that is essentially a defensive position that says, "Well, I didn't do that." And that's actually not the point.
What is the point?
The point is to understand that we do things at times almost unconsciously and at other times very deliberately and with malice that put young women in a position of fearfulness. This is something I have struggled to understand, and I've come to this realization in the last few years. I was raised never to tell a woman that she might be in a weaker position, that was a sign of utter disrespect. Believe me, mm-hmm. my wife has reminded me of that many times. And only recently, when you begin to open the discussion of what's frightening for women and accept that they are in a position in our society where they do not have as much power as men, that they very quickly become tearful and actually say things like, It's scary. I used an example last time of being in the bike lane. It's like we're in the bike lane and everybody tells us it's safe there, but it's not safe. Cars are coming by trying to hit us all the time in life. And understanding that, we have to realize that's what really rape culture comes down to. That's what low consent culture comes down to, is always having to be on edge.
That's such a great metaphor you just gave. This notion of being in the bike lane, you know.
Yeah.
Ting, ting, does that sound right to you? Is that how your life feels to you, that you're in the bike lane of life as opposed to the mainstream of life somehow?
I mean, absolutely. Any time that I leave my house or leave someplace that I feel safe, it's so scary. It's as if you've never interacted. It's as if you've never interacted with a world before. You don't know the risks that are there. And it's not something that an adult or a parent would be able to prevent.
I can't relate to any of this. This is just so amazing.
And it's
to
important
me,
you know? That you understand that.
Right.
We
have Bang to my head learn against it. The wall.
Yeah.
Right.
We have to learn it through this conversation. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's how you feel.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of have this unpopular opinion, and I did a poll of some of my friends where I was like, I think most men have probably sexually harassed someone without knowing it, because that's just this kind of subtle culture that we've allowed to occur and allowed to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And instantly there's this kind of defensive, this almost victimized conversation that occur from it. And
you hurt my ego.
Right.
When you said that. Right.
And it's not something that it's like a personal attack against your personality or your pride or whoever you are. It's just, we have to recognize that this is a culture and that this is a thing that we have allowed to happen.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about rape culture with a panel of young people and Dr. Wes Crenshaw. And, you know, to what extent are the male seniors at your high school, Tingting, how open are they to the kinds of conversations that we're having here today?
Not open at all.
That's really something.
This is the problem.
But you think that young people, my stereotype is young people, young men, would be more open than meatheads my age, you know?
I mean, I think it really does come down to this masculine-driven, ego-driven personality, where when we try to have conversations like this with them, it instantly is as if we are attacking them, which is not what it's supposed to be about.
And you have to be willing to audit yourself. And I will tell you, Steve, you and I had one of these one time. I came in here very early in my doing shows with you, and I had three young women, and we did a show about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I introduced them to you as three beautiful women. And it never occurred to me. I then added, and they're smart too. What a terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
And so when Tingting says to me, I think all men commit misogyny, I wouldn't have called that sexual harassment, but it was misogynistic to say that. It was to diminish them to just being beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go back and audit yourself and say, I probably am flawed. And a lot of guys have a hard time doing that. And I didn't like to think about doing things like that.
You know, Claire, I'm sitting here, listening to this conversation. I'm wondering, a lot of people might assume that because the spotlight is shining so brightly on this issue right now, that the problem is going to disappear because people are so aware. But what I'm hearing from you guys is this is the start of a conversation. This is the launching of a process, if you will.
Yeah. It's ingrained. It's it's honestly so deeply rooted in society and in our daily lives that sometimes I don't even notice it. And sometimes my peers don't even notice it until somebody's like, that seems a little off, what he did or what she did to him. That's wrong. So it's not going to disappear. It takes work. It takes changing of mindsets and redirecting the way you were brought up.
Right.
Because we were obviously raised in this society, and to kind of tear away those thinkings that we've had growing up, it's very difficult. It's that's I can admit to that, but it's not going to disappear right away.
Sahil, I want to go back to a comment that Tingting made about her experiences at Free State High School over in Lawrence. This notion that high school male seniors are not open-minded to these conversations, has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, pretty much. For example,
it's not lost on me. We're having this conversation with three women as opposed to, men,
Yeah. Talking about rape culture or just cases where sexual harassment or just simple acts of misogyny have occurred in the school, typically male students get really defensive as if you're attacking them when you're just kind of calling them out on their behavior, not really doing it in a way to hurt their ego, but help them learn.
Mm-hmm. And I really think that the only way to have this conversation, and it's not any easier than the way we're having it, is to try to build empathy for women's position in society so that guys can understand it hurts. Like, guys, there's a tradition in our society that we don't hurt women, and we may need to pick up on that sort of antiquated idea and to say this hurts. I think guys blow it off and think, well, you know, I'm just playing around, or this is the dating pool. When we grew up, Steve will remember the Meatloaf song, Paradise by the Dashboard Light. It was a massive hit. And the whole point of that song is about a guy convincing a girl to have sex with him by promising to stay with her forever. And while that dynamic isn't quite the same nowadays, this idea that you had to coerce a girl into having sex with you was part of the dating game, was absolutely the way things were done. And what a terrible idea. We have a different model nowadays, but I don't know that it's less misogynistic than it was.
What percentage of your friends, your female friends, we're talking mostly male female dynamics here, I guess, here today, Ting Ting. What percentage of your female friends would raise their hands in a big auditorium and acknowledge they've had a serious issue at one time or another when it comes to the issues we're talking about today, being violated sexually, you know, in a way that was uncomfortable at a minimum, or worse off, maybe more serious case?
I mean, I would say nearly 100% of
You're
them.
You're kidding. This is just amazing to me.
Well, that includes things like being touched in ways that you didn't ask to be touched. And you'd be kind of horrified at how easy that is to do.
100%.
Mm-hmm. It's...
Well, what do you make of that?
I mean, it's horrifying. There was something that I was reading online yesterday. It was a post from someone that I know very closely. And it said, like, I'm thinking about how I've never met a woman or a female that has never been sexually violated, has never been demeaned, has never been like, or has never felt this weight, this huge, tremendous weight of misogyny on them. And it's horrible, but it's something we have to address.
Claire, 100%, does that sound right to you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, all of my friends.
And all of your friends.
One of the things I want them to share, yeah.
100%?
Yeah, definitely.
One of
That's
the things,
just reality for us.
I want him to give an example, because when we were doing the show prep, even I was taken back about this. This was the hair touching. Can you talk about that?
Sometimes teachers just like to get a little too touchy with their students. Particularly one of my teachers thinks that complimenting their female students a little too much is okay, or rubbing their shoulders, or even petting their hair is a gesture of kindness, when in reality it's just unprofessional and crosses a lot of lines.
And hear exactly how she said that. She didn't say, my teachers are sexually touching me. That's not the point.
Right, sure.
What she's saying is they're not acting in a consensual manner. I didn't say, could you touch my hair today, please, or rub my shoulders? And I'm sure the teachers think, you're exactly right, that's a sign of kindness. But we got to rethink stuff like that.
I wonder if our listeners, we're going to take a break here, if our listeners want to react to what they're hearing today, because this is such interesting information, I think. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Or if you have thoughts on where we need to go as a society to move forward, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCURUpToDate. You're listening to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Last week on the show, we looked at recent changes in Missouri's adoption law, and we asked local teachers what's missing when we teach history. You can find those conversations and a whole lot more at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow on the show, the Missouri State Auditor Nicole Galloway joins us for a conversation about using open record requests to intimidate and about a bill backing up the state's whistleblowers. We'll also meet a Kansas City woman who kicked off her retirement by hiking the entire Appalachian Trail. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, this hour we're talking with a panel of high school seniors from Lawrence talking about rape culture, misogyny, sexual harassment, abuse of power, and a whole lot more. Dr. Wes Crenshaw, Lawrence psychologist and author of the forthcoming series of books, Consent-Based Sex Ed Education, is with us as well. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. The board has lit up. Option two is to tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Wes, how do you manage to get different groups talking to each other and making this a better situation? Because ultimately, that's where we got to be here, right?
Yeah, and we're going to have to think of a better model for doing this than what we're doing, because we're, as everything in our country, we become polarized. And I think one of the things we know from the research on relationships is that accepting influence from your partner is a critical part of a successful relationship. Likewise, as a society, to have men and women be able to join in conversation, they've got to accept influence from one another. And I'm a little worried we're getting polarized. So the whole idea is empathy. And I think the young women like this are going to have to go out and start some pretty courageous conversations that don't sound like attacking. They're going to have to be able to say, this is why it's hard for us, and we're still evolving that. It's hard.
You know, Asayal, I was saying during the break, your comment before the break about teachers, a teacher at your high school walking up and rubbing the shoulders of students, maybe both male and female. Again, that just astonishes me that in this day and age, that's still going on. What does it take to get the message across that you can't do that now, you know?
I find confrontation the best option, but for a lot of people, that's hard to do against your teacher.
Of course it is.
It's such a strong power.
Because the teacher has the power, right?
Yeah.
And control over your grade, for that matter.
Yes. Even some of my teachers, when they were in college, they faced the same thing with their professors. In high school, they faced the same thing with their teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's just an ongoing cycle.
And I think it's crucial we hear what's most important here is the power dynamic. We are currently in a society where men have more power over women, especially young women. I think we have to guard against the idea that that's just gender-based, it's power-based. And so we have many examples of women committing sexual misconduct or sexual harassment, and I think more will come out. Part of why we don't see those reported is because men don't associate that with something they associate with something embarrassing, to think, well, a woman sexually harassed me. You don't want to tell anyone that. This is why we also see less reporting of sexual abuse by men. So I want to be clear, the power dynamic does favor men. In no way am I saying otherwise, but the power dynamic is what we have to begin to deal with.
Ting Ting, as you begin your, presumably you're going off to college, maybe beginning a career.
To the
at
University
some point.
Of Chicago. She's accepted an early decision.
Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Terrific.
Thank you.
This notion of what Dr. West was just talking about, of this power dynamic between men and women, how confident are you that during the course of your career that's going to even out?
I definitely have seen improvements. The field of study that I want to go in is kind of in the STEM fields, and those definitely have seen improvements.
Although that's also a challenging field when it comes to the male-female power dynamic, at least that's based on what I've read, yeah.
I think when we see so much backlash, not only like political with Trump getting elected and the conservative alt-right like rising in power, but also just male backlash against these conversations, the power balance that, or the power imbalance that we're seeing now is not going to change fast enough.
Okay. Let's go to some phone calls here. We have a whole bunch of them. Let's begin with Chris from Kansas City, Missouri. Chris, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. The question I wanted to bring up was about beauty pageants. Part of the culture that's creating the situation is seeing women only as beautiful. And how do beauty pageants today fit into that, and are they outdated?
Claire, what do you think?
I think in some cases they are outdated, but I do know that there are some beauty pageants out there that are trying to modernize the entire the concept of it and trying to make
Miss America being one, I think, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I haven't been caught up, but yeah. More trying questions, like the ones that really bring out the intellect in a person, stuff like that. But as of right now, I still think it, like what Chris was saying, it's very more appearance-based from what I can tell.
Asayo, what do you make of them?
It really depends on your intent with going in as a contestant. Because I know a lot of women do it because it empowers them, and I totally am for that.
Empowers them how?
That they can embark in their beauty, they can show off their intelligence all in one showcase. And if it's a woman's choice, I'm totally down for that.
Mm-hmm. This is the new rules of feminism, is the idea that consent, or as we describe it in the book, you do what you mean to do. You're mindful in your consent. So if you understand your role in a beauty pageant and you want to express that yourself that way, that's okay. It's not that just purely objectifies the person.
Mm-hmm. Ting, what do you make of that, the beauty pageant idea?
I think that they're definitely changing. There was recently a beauty pageant in South America, I want to say in Peru, some country, where instead of the women giving like their body measurements and like descriptions of themselves, they give statistics of the femicide that was happening within that country. So like the girls that were getting abducted every day, or the number of women that were getting murdered every day.
Right. Now I want to go back to a key point, I think, in this conversation, Wes, that we got to a little bit in the first half, this notion of consent when it comes to sexual encounters. What is it? What constitutes consent? And how are we navigating that issue in terms of educating men, particularly, about what consent really means?
Yeah, I named this book 4 years ago. You know, we've been working on it forever. It's going to be 4 books that are 900 pages total. And all of it, every page of it, emanates from the idea that consent means not simply no means no. We all agree on that. Not even yes means yes. It means, am I doing what I mean to do, and am I respecting the other person and doing what they mean to do?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, under an ideal model, you hear the partner say, yes, I want to do this. But you recognize there's something wrong here. The partner's doing this because they just want to be with you. They're not thinking, you know, I meant to do this. And so you don't have sex with them or kiss them or do whatever. People learn to interpret consent at a deeper level. That takes us into a whole bunch of other things.
But how is that education? How are those messages being transmitted these days?
Parents have to teach it this way. This is why we call it consent-based sex education. Schools are going to have a very hard time going beyond yes means yes and no means no. And this allows us then to say to young men, this is how you listen for consent. This is how you attain consent. This is how you give consent, and young women too. This is the contract, and it's not this deal where you have to sign a notarized document.
Right.
But you know how to listen for consent, and you put that above your urges or social upbringing or social messages or peer messages or parent messages or anything else. That's where consent becomes key in everything. And the only way to teach that is to tell kids that sexual expression is an authentic choice, and we've run away from that for years.
Claire, do young men, do your fellow high school seniors, do they get it? Do they understand what consent is?
No, they don't. We've had a lot of cases in our school concerning like rape and sexual harassment. We try to educate them about it, but like what Ting Ting and Asal have said earlier, they get very defensive and they start saying, not all men. And it's hard to get.
And the conversation sort of stops there, you're
saying. Yeah. And it's just very frustrating when you're trying to get your point across and they just build a wall up and they're like, I've never done that and will never do this. None of my friends have done this.
But because they immediately associate it with raping you. And none of us want to hear that. If we go back and say, this is consent, let's work together to get it, you'll get a door open. Now, I'm having like an idealism moment, I understand, but that's the path.
Ting Ting, you agree young men don't get it yet?
Absolutely. It's, I don't, I think it is somewhat of a difficult concept to wrap your head around, but in another way, it's so simple to just respect someone else. But I think our country is probably having issues with respect.
It's not a favorable climate, is it?
Yeah. David from Independence. David, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about sexual harassment with a panel of high school seniors here. Good morning.
Good morning. My comment is my daughter's in junior high. Do not feel respected. They are touched on a daily basis, and when they retaliate, they are now the aggressor. They are held responsible for whatever that other person has done. That, you know, if they punch, kick, whatever, because the little boy has touched her inappropriately, they get detention, they get suspension, and that little boy doesn't, because the school attitude is, well, boys will be boys.
I'd like to tell you,
David, I'm looking at two of our three guests who are both nodding their heads vigorously in agreement with what you're saying.
I was going to say, I'd like to tell you that I've never heard of such a thing, and I hear it all the time. And even when teachers try to protect kids, they sometimes don't get support from administration to do that, because, you know, boys will be boys. I like the sign I saw in Chicago the other day that they cancel out boys will be boys, and it says boys will, you know, like, seek consent or something like that. It's a great advertisement.
David, I gather that the education process, telling young boys what they should and shouldn't do, that's not happening at the junior high level?
I would say not. It has to start with the parents. I've got
right.
a son, and, you know, I've been, since he was in, you know, sixth grade, don't touch a girl unless you're sure that that's what they want. If you're playing as an equal, you know, you're playing tag or whatever, that's acceptable. But if you go along and you touch her and she's just standing there, that's not an acceptable touch.
Good for you.
Because it's not an expected touch.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, I've had both my daughters suspended because they've smacked a little boy.
Wow.
You know, and I don't feel that's not their responsibility to police the little boys, especially when it's, you know, one in particular or two in particular, and it's been, you know, brought up several times. So
unlike this,
my frustration is their frustration. I'm sorry.
David, thank you for the call.
Unlike this caller, most parents have a hard time sitting down and talking to their children about this. It's way more fun. It's not fun, but it's way more fun to sit down and say to your kids, here's how to not be a victim. We do that kind of in our society.
Mm-hmm.
It's real hard to sit down and do what he is suggesting, which I have done with my son, and say, this is what it means to harm a dating partner. This is what it means to not have consent. This is what it means to have consent. And if you ever get in a position where you're violating someone's consent, you're going to be sitting on the couch with me, not doing much for a long time, or whatever punishment you think is appropriate there. It's very serious.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We're talking about sexual harassment involving young people and how they're coping and dealing with this. Let's go to Jen from Westwood on the Missouri side. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you guys doing?
Well, Jen, thank you for calling.
Good. Thank you for having me. What I wanted to say, my comment or my question is, it seems like the Me Too movement is really focused on sexual harassment in the workplace. My concern is I don't want the rest of us to be left behind, you know, as far as all the sexual abuse and sexual violence that's going on, the domestic issues that we have going on at home with little boys and girls just on a daily basis. I think that really needs to be brought to the forefront. I just went to court and I confronted my perpetrator. So, you know, I just want to let everybody know that we also, as common, you know, the more common citizens or, you know, the little guys of like us, that we also have recourse. We have a lot of legal recourse and good sources out there to help us.
Right.
So, I would just like to see more of a more inclusive discussion about all of us.
Jen, thank you for the good call. Appreciate it. Yeah.
I'll take comments off the air. Thank you.
Yeah. Any thoughts here?
Well, we're trying to be pretty inclusive. I think we're talking about this from a broader perspective. I think the other thing to extend what I said is it's a lot more fun to sit down and tell your child about stranger danger, which is just almost not a thing. you know, your child's chances of being sexually mistreated by an acquaintance are tons higher than it is by a stranger. But we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to say if your uncle touches you or the teacher touches you in a certain way, then that's a problem. We don't like that. We want to say a stranger shows up and does this, which is confusing and pretty unhelpful.
You know, Asayal, I wanted to turn a little bit and talk a little more about what impact living in a culture like this has on people like you. We talked in the first half about, you know, like you're living in the bike lane of life, you know, driving down a busy street. Talk a little more about how does all this impact you?
It's really scary. Nightlife for young men is completely different than nightlife for us young women. I was taught to always watch out for strangers around me, change, like, which side of the sidewalk I'd be on if someone was following me. I know a lot of women, when they go off to college, buy pepper spray, tasers, and whatever means or ways to protect themselves. And it's frightening knowing that I have to do this or I might risk getting violated.
Ting Ting.
I mean, Asayal put it really well. Just
scary, frightening. Those are the words she's using.
Even during the day, it's terrifying because, like, the activities that I participate in almost allow for these things to happen without consequences. And also, like, when we continue to have these conversations, it's terrifying to have these conversations, not only because they're very personal to us, but also because we get a lot of backlash for it, and we're deemed
as... Do you think you'll get backlash when you go back to high school about this show today?
I mean, probably. People will probably come up to me and say that I was too aggressive when I talked about it, or that I was, like, quote, a feminazi, and which is not the goal that I was trying to accomplish here.
How does that make you feel? I mean, what does that do to you?
I mean, not only do I have to deal with, like, misogyny and the patriarchy on a daily basis, but it shows that my voice and the things that I have to say are continuing to be devalued in this culture, and that we still are refusing to address problems.
Yeah, Claire.
Well, like how Asayal did put it earlier, it's very scary. And I think, and for women of color, it's scarier, the statistics. Native American women are sexually harassed more. They receive sexual violence more, and so do Black women. And the fetishization of women of color as well. It's a factor, like unwanted comments from peers and from teachers sometimes. You're so exotic. I had where I work, my manager has called my voice exotic. Didn't particularly like that. It's just the subtle things that they really do make a difference into my everyday life.
Yeah. I'm going to get a phone call from Richard from Overland Park who wants to talk about Oprah Winfrey's big speech last night at the Golden Globes. Richard, good morning.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. I'll be brief. I know we're short on time. I had my 12-year-old and 10-year-old come downstairs, and I paused and rewound Oprah's speech last night, and I understood that at 10 years old, they were going to have a lot of questions and not necessarily understand the entirety of the content of her message. But what was important to me was for them to get a feel for her passion and the effect, the visceral effect she was having on that crowd of people. That was a historic moment last night, and I felt as though that Oprah Winfrey, I mean, I don't want to be overstating, it could be hitting a presidential run based on the strength of that speech.
There's talk about that today, Richard.
I mean, I was so moved by that, unexpectedly moved by that, and it was so important for me to have my boys, I have a 7-year-old daughter and 2 older sons, and it was so important for me for them to understand, not necessarily every single aspect of what she was saying, but how that was a line in the sand, how that was a moment in history that they needed to understand the impact of. It was very important to me, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. And Sahil, when Richard began talking about Oprah, you raised both hands up in the air in a triumphant sort of gesture. What did you make of it?
Her speech was absolutely beautiful. I couldn't have put it into better words. She addressed it in such an elegant way. I honestly couldn't have done it better. No one could have. And I applaud her for addressing it like that.
A defining moment in the culture, you think?
It definitely is.
Well, yes. And I want to lift up what the caller said as a parent. One of the things we do in the book is at the end of every chapter, we have these scripted conversations you can have under four circumstances. And one is that you have sort of an incidental occasion like media or something pops up. That's a perfect example. He sees the moment and seizes the moment to help his child understand by using Oprah Winfrey's speech and whatever conversation they can have at every level, he can build off of that. Those are the kind of things that need to generate these discussions.
Well, we're out of time, but you guys have just been terrific today. Great comments. Sure appreciate you making the trip over here to visit with us and enlighten so many of us about the worlds that you're growing up in. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It gets Ting Ting, Claire, and Sahil, and we were joined by Dr. Wes Crenshaw, Lawrence Bay psychologist and author. His forthcoming series of books, Consent-Based Sex Education. Wes, always appreciate your time.
Good to be here.
You can go there to our website at kcur.org and check out Friday's program about poverty simulations for med students and a set of recommendations to help curb harassment in the Kansas legislature. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow, we'll talk to the Missouri State Auditor about groups using open records requests as weapons. And we'll meet a Kansas City woman who kicked off her retirement by hiking from Georgia to Maine on the Appalachian Trail. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Kathleen Pointer. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.